Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN AM for Monday, March 18th, 2024. And our top story today, putting a spouse or partner in a long-term care facility represents a difficult transition. Joining me now to discuss this and a lot more, Dr. Robin Berkland is with the University of Minnesota School of Public Health. Dr. Berkland, it is so great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and look, this is a really important topic that I think a lot of families, spouses, partners, but also family members facing that dreaded decision to put a loved one or have a loved one go into long-term care. You and the team did a lot of research around this. How big of a deal is this for individuals?
Yeah, we our research was about after they had moved into long-term care. But even before that, we know from other research that it is a very big decision. It is one that is often made under crises, and so that makes it even a harder decision. And the crisis could be anything from something happening to the care recipient, to a health issue for the caregiver who then could no longer provide care. And say you break a leg and you end up in the hospital, now you can't provide care. And it's like, well, we have to figure out something and we have to figure out something fast. So I'm just going to jump to a piece of advice. But one thing to think about in advance is if that were to happen, what would you do? And to plan for it in case it does, as far as going to look at different residential care centers and trying to figure out. There's a lot of different things that go into that decision, but just do you like it? What is the atmosphere like? What do the residents there look like? Are they happy? Are they engaged? Are the people who work there interacting with them and kind of just like that feel for it? But to have that idea of what you might do before you get in the situation where it has to happen is a much better place to be in than to have it be forced upon you and then just have to kind of go with whatever you can quickly come up with as a place for your loved one to move to.
Yeah. And this is, again, we're going to talk more about the transition, but I just wanted to really set that up because this is a really big change for couples and partners, et cetera. Let's talk about that transition because according to the research, it's a fraughtful, it can be frightening both for the transitioner, the person going into the long-term care facility. But I also think that the other partner, the partner kind of left behind, if you will, or staying at home, that's frightening as well.
It is. I mean, it's a complete change in your daily routine. It's a change in your identity. It's a change in just how other people are supportive of you. A lot of times when your care recipient moves to long-term care, there's just kind of this lack of support. Then before maybe people were stopping by, helping out, but now they're thinking, well, they're care recipients in long-term care. So they have, all day to do whatever they want. And they kind of fall back a little bit in that care, but there's in the care for the caregiver, but the caregiver still is providing a lot of care, even if the person is living in long-term care. It's not like your caregiving role stops. You may not be doing those same daily logistical, making sure they get their medication and dressing and all that. But what you're doing is it's kind of like being an advocate for them, being their voice, being a monitor and seeing like is what the care they're supposed to be provided, is that what they're getting? You're basically there. You're the expert on them, and so you're telling their caregivers, the professional caregivers, what their preferences are, what they enjoy, who they are as a person, so that they can get the best care. They can get more cooperation. They can get like an actual relationship, and it's not just the resident who lives in room 14. This is John, and this is what this is who he's always been, and this is what he always takes his showers at night. Well, maybe that they can put that into their routine to give him a shower at night, because if they try in the morning, they may not be getting that cooperation and he may be miserable. And, we're trying to make everyone life have a better quality of life and do better where they're at. So, it's a constant caregiving. It's just now their care recipient is in a different setting.
Yeah. And I want to talk about it for a minute, and then we'll go to a commercial break because I want to talk about some best practices. But from the perspective of the long-term care facility, there's a lot that they need to do to facilitate an easy transition. Because again, there are things that they should be doing. You mentioned learning about the caregiving or the care recipient, I guess is how to phrase it properly. But they need to kind of help with transitioning. Are they prepared to do that in general? I mean, obviously, you can't speak for everyone, but caregiving in, I would say, generally speaking, we have a lack of caregivers. People that work in these facilities, they're traditionally understaffed, underfunded. It's hard these days to find a caregiver.
Absolutely. And that has been something we started the study we were working on before COVID. And so then we've seen like what has happened with the workforce during COVID and after. But even before, it's always, like you said, it's understaffed, they're not paid well. There's a lot of transition in who's working there, a lot of turnover. So it's not I wouldn't say it's necessarily w well set up, but I will say that the industry knows this, and the aging field knows this, and are really trying to figure out different ways to get more professional caregivers and more training, and just to kind of build that career up so that it is something that people are actively trying to seek out. They should, back to your original question, I would hope that most, but a good care facility will have an interview process at the beginning of the transition into long-term care to find out about that person and to make sure that their new resident to know all the little details. But sometimes they don't, and sometimes they don't have the manpower, even if it's part of their process, they just don't have the ability. And sometimes it's not, it's with certain people, but then other people. Or certain employees, but then they leave because of that turnover, and then you need to have other employees learn about them. So you're, as a caregiver, even if you do have that interview and have given the information, you constantly need to be talking to whoever is working with your loved one, because there's a lot of information to give, and it's, a constant process of updating and making sure that everyone's on the same page.
Yeah. Well, Robin, as I said, a very important topic, but I need to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some more tips to help with the transition to long-term care. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN AM. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms? Especially for the smaller businesses. I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you gotta start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're gonna change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network. Robin, thanks so much for staying with us. Really appreciate you hanging around for segment number two this morning.
Absolutely.
And I just want to piggyback on something you said, and we were talking about this in between during the commercial break, which really wasn't a commercial break, but we insert it later. Anyway, that the caregiving community, the employers, caregiving associations, they're really focused on helping to make up this shortage. But it's also a focus of the U.S. Congress to figure this out as well, because candidly, America's aging, just like every other Western country. So we're all going to be in this situation at some point. So we need caregivers.
I think that is like the big take home message that we've been getting in the aging field is yes, we are all aging as a population, and there are going to be so many more who need care. And we currently don't have enough caregivers. How in the world are we going to be able to fill that need 10 years, 20 years from now? And so it's nice to see. I mean, it's definitely a concern, and people are, like I said earlier, are working on it, trying to find novel ways to engage people, especially like young adults, teenagers, into like getting into these fields to help with aging. But the, like you said, Congress, it's been nice, like in the past few years. I don't want to put a time bracket on it because I'm not exactly sure, but we've had a lot of different funding come through for Alzheimer's disease, for caregiving. So they're definitely seeing this, and it's nice to have a proactive stance about, okay, what can we do now? Before, it's like, I mean, it already is a problem, but we know it's going to be an even bigger problem in the future. So what can we do now to try to get money in place and systems in place and platforms in place to make this easier on all of us?
Yeah. And just to pick up on that real quick, and then I want to go to some tips. Local governments also. I know New York. We've had New York State on. Even local governments are focusing on aging. So I think that you're right. People are really focused. The people in the right places are focused on this, and there's clearly need. Let's talk about some tips. And we talked earlier in segment one about the transition and what the caregiver who's currently doing it. How their role is going to change, how they're becoming an advocate. We also talked about what the caregiving facility would do. But I wonder, is there anything that the caregiving recipient can do to help make a positive transition if they're able to do so?
You know, I think it has been, for in our research, we have found that there are some people who are very willing to go, who recognize even before it's time, like when it is time, I will move. I want that. And that has been incredibly helpful for families because you're not fighting against somebody who doesn't want to go. And it's such a hard decision to make anyways. And it's just hard to do. And there's a lot of guilt associated with it. To have somebody willing to go makes it a lot easier, but that is not something that, you know, a lot of, well, the caregiver has a lot of control over, and it's not something that the care recipient necessarily is has a lot of control over either. It's this part of their makeup, because understandably, a lot of people would like to age in place. They'd like to age at home. That's been another big initiative to try to figure out ways that people can do that. I think things that can make it easier is having it be as close to your home setup as possible. And part of that is, again, letting the staff know what that person or even the care recipient is able to speak for themselves, to say, hey, this is what I like, and trying to create a routine that resembles what they have done at home. But it also is important for the, you know, the room itself to be set up as close to home. Having towels from home can be helpful. Having bedding from home, having pictures around, having those things that reflect who that person is and what they've enjoyed in their surroundings. So it doesn't feel like they're living in a cold kind of facility. It needs to be more of a home. And so that is a big piece of it. And finding care centers who have that kind of feel of, this is your home, this isn't an institution, and having a lot of activities, and, you know, something to ask about if you have that luxury of asking what, you know, like beforehand, if it's something you can plan and not just have to do. But having that, like, what are your meals like? Are they, you know, what is offered? Are they able to do some different things for my My husband won't eat salad. Is there salad forced at every meal, or how is that? Or we'll only eat salad. Can we accommodate that? So just trying to figure out what that center will do, what that community can do as far as meals, as far as activities, and again, just trying to make that room feel as home-like as possible.
Yeah, as you're talking, I remember, I don't know if you watched The Sopranos, but there was a few episodes where they were taking the mother, Mrs. Soprano, Olivia Soprano, and putting her into a community, and she just did not want any of that, and she put up a big stink about that. Robin, just to kind of close out the interview, how do you follow up this research? So what can you share a little bit about what you're working on next? I think people would find that interesting. So you did this work on the transition research. Anything you can share about future research on aging that we might be interested in?
Yeah, so we have done a few other projects since then. With the transition into long-term care, we also looked at guilt specifically between adult children and their parents, and then spouses. Something we found with that was that spouses were less likely to feel guilt. And my thinking is, they probably know that they were in the trenches and they tried everything. And so they knew that it was time to move versus an adult child who may not be living with the parent who may be thinking, well, like if I would have done this or I would have done that. So that was something that we did. We looked specifically at COVID and how that impacted, which was, that's a whole nother interview. And then we've moved to different projects where we're working with, we've done driving retirement with caregivers and with individuals with dementia who were either had it retired from driving and were adjusting to it, or were in that process of transitioning into it. So we had a support intervention for that. We've had a support intervention right now that is for people who are living alone, and they have cognitive impairment, and really working with them to support them and looking at home safety and looking at engaging in different activity and making sure that they're, connected with their community and with other people. We've
Yeah.
also are have a current project working with individuals who have a history of TBI, traumatic brain injury, and dementia, and providing support to their caregivers, because that's, that's two very big issues that often kind of are seen together, and so we wanted to come up with an intervention that would help caregivers for someone with both of those issues. So that's what we've been working on primarily.
So not much.
Not much. We have a few.
No.
There's definitely other things too, but we keep it busy
Yeah,
researching.
well, I mean, this is, look, I think for even people my age, I'm in my early 50s, these are things you have to think about, because one day, even if you're a youngster today, you're 18, 16, 17, 18 years old, you too will be in this circumstance as well. Robin, we're going to have to leave it there. Great to catch up with you. Thanks so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you back on the program again very soon.
Thank you so much. It was great.
And that wraps up this episode of BRN AM. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to? Then drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more, all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Well, visit our website. Hey, we're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRN AM. We'll have a very special guest and, of course, an important topic. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes. Now is your opportunity to co-create content around any topic on the First Lifestyle and Wellness Network. Reach a global audience through our platform and co-own exclusive branded content. All of our programs are available on demand and also as audio-only podcasts, so you can take us on the go. Broadcast Retirement Network, available anytime, anywhere, and on any device.